Are you looking for a book to boost your child's self-esteem and image? Listen to what six-time Emmy Award winner and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Sean Duperin has to say about the Journey of Joy children's book series. She says, quote, "It's inspiring to find a children's book series that gets to the heart of why we're here and to enjoy life's journey. It is truly compelling. It reinforces your child's strong sense of self, the essence of what every parent wants for their precious child. I highly recommend," end quote. The four inspiring and beautifully illustrated books in the Journey of Joy children's book series, authored by Beth Donnelly and Dagny Grant, can be found on Amazon.com. Sharing the wisdom of positive I Am statements, these books are titled I Am Enough, I Am Unique and Awesome, I Am Great, and I Am Brave. Pick up a set for the children in your life today. Just go to Amazon.com and enter Journey of Joy series. That's Journey of Joy series. Welcome to the Echoes of the Universe radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. Conscious Conversations with Dagny Grant and Beth Donnelly, sharing thought-expanding moments to nourish your soul.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Echoes of the Soul program, brought to you by Matrix Productions. This is Dagny Grant, and I'm here with my co-host, Beth Donnelly, today for a fun conversation with two amazing women, Jane DeForest and Petra Nicole. We're going to be talking today about the upcoming Afterlife Symposium, which will be held on April 14th and 15th in Portland, Oregon. I'm on the studio board in Southern California today, but Jane, Petra, and my co-host Beth are all on air in Oregon. How are things in your world today, Beth?
They are quite wonderful. We're having a little bit of rain, but, you know, we've had some really good weather last week, so I'm good with this. And I'm really looking forward to the interview today with Jane and Petra. And you're right, they are both amazing women. And this Afterlife Symposium sounds so interesting. And I'm just hoping we're going to get some really good information about it so that our viewers will be knowing how to get involved in this symposium. So, yes, very fun.
Yeah, the symposium looks like it's going to be really fascinating and fun. For our audience, we're going to be doing something a little bit different on the show today, where we will focus on our conversation with Jane in the first segment and then speak in more detail with Petra after the break. This should be incredibly fun and really interesting. So let me tell everyone listening in a little bit about these two women. Today we're going to be speaking with author and emotional energy coach Petra Nicole. Petra is an international best-selling author whose first book, Petra's Ashes, was hailed as a spellbinding memoir about her near-death experience and the spiritual journey that followed. She has also co-authored a book titled The Big Secret with Jack Canfield of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. This book is published in the anthology Life Sparks, Life Stories to Illuminate, Inspire, and Ignite. Petra recently published her first novel, The Billionaire, The Continuum, which is a continuation of the big questions in her life about power, corruption, greed, love, sacrifice, good versus evil, human trafficking, and, of course, the afterlife. Petra has been an intuitive coach and mentor for over 25 years, and she's also a radio show host, international speaker, and workshop and seminar leader. In all of that work, she helps you unravel and unveil your patterns so that you can live your highest potential. Petra creates through her near-death experience and extreme pain and sorrow of exposure of the tragic death of her mother, suicide, depression, and realities of war. She's been led to the masters of the Far East and to the shamans of North America and Mexico. These adventures have awakened her to the realization and vision that she has been given to become transformed and more intuitive, authentic, and soul-centered, and has taken her on the journey that she now uses as tools to help others. So we're really looking forward to hearing more from Petra and hear about what she's been up to and what she's going to be speaking a little bit about at the symposium. First, however, we will be speaking with Jane DeForest as an intuitive coach, animal communicator, and medium for almost 20 years. Jane has worked with clients all over the world. She's known for the integrity, humor, talent, and sensitivity she brings to her sessions, which leave her clients feeling inspired, supported, and seen. With her automatic drawing technique, Jane often draws exact renderings of people and places she's never seen, and the images and messages she receives are documented in an original art piece. Jane also does some pro bono work, which is bringing voice to special needs children, as well as saving bees. Jane DeForest has studied with a Lakota shaman, Buddhist meditation teachers, and Jean Houston at her mystery school, as well as at the Rhode Island School of Design. Jane has also journeyed to sacred sites in Peru, Bali, Sedona, and Egypt. And so we're so excited to speak to you two women today. This is going to be so much fun, and it sounds like you have just so far lived incredibly rich and fascinating lives. Before we begin our conversation, Beth and I would like to first welcome both of you, Petra and Jane, to the program today. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, we're happy you both.
This is going to be really fun. I'd like to begin by asking Jane about the Afterlife Symposium. So, Jane, tell us the what, who, when, and where is the Afterlife Symposium, and what inspired the creation of it?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It will be held at the largest New Age bookstore in the country, New Renaissance Bookshop, and that's in Portland, Oregon, at 1338 Northwest 23rd Avenue. And lovely people, and they have a lovely event center there. So that'll be held. The symposium where we will present ideas and experiences about the afterlife will be held on April 14th from 2 to 8. 2 to 6, and then the following day is a workshop, and that will be from 2 to 5 at the same location. And in that event, people will have an experience of journeying to the place between worlds, the dream time, the place where we can connect with animals and loved ones on the other side. It's a process. And we'll be using guided meditation techniques, copper pyramids, and sound baths to allow people to journey and leave the workaday consciousness and achieve an expanded consciousness, which is required to make contact.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of expansive participation by the people who are going to be joining you. Quite wonderful. Jane, could you tell us how you chose the four people that are going to be speaking at this Afterlife Symposium?
In a way, it seemed like it was beyond me. I really we all congealed and we had similar interests and wanted and felt that we were stronger together and being able to express different aspects of the concept. For example, Petra has had a very powerful near-death experience, which is a profound personal journey to the afterlife. Georgina has had a lot of experience with processing grief in the body. Her son committed suicide as a teenager, and the tragedy of that experience was turned into a gift as she's helped so many people with such a powerful and amazing journey, and she's in communication with him on a regular basis. Ruth Brennan was because of certain tragedies and losses in her life, was brought to the ancient teachings of the afterlife, which are extremely important because many, many ancient cultures before us have found, in my opinion, more cohesive ways of working with the afterlife and those on the other side in a more organic and natural way. There's a taboo in our culture about communicating with the afterlife. So in historical terms, it's been really recently that we've considered talking to the afterlife and those in the spirit world to be taboo. So I myself am a medium, and my first experience with communicating with the afterlife was completely accidental. But I've been able to transcend this three-dimensional world since I was a little girl.
Can you tell us a little bit about?
Sorry, but go ahead.
No, it just sounded very exciting. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Your first experience with transcending this as a little girl?
As a little girl, I had no problem being able to understand what was real and what wasn't, and was confused when grown-ups seemed to be, from my vantage point, intentionally lying. that got me into a lot of trouble, and I was able to journey through a tunnel, what I really believe is a wormhole, to other dimensions, and communicate with trees and animals and fairies and elves and dwarves. This is, by the way, not at all unusual, and there's nothing special or exceptional about that. Most children can interact with the spirit beings that exist among us, just in a different dimension. It's just that we as adults or the culturally teach our young people that this is purely the imagination. But my first interaction with a spirit on the other side was my mother-in-law.
Oh.
My husband and I had been chatting in the living room one evening and visiting after dinner, and I very clearly perceived a being in our that was present, and I described the outfit that she was wearing to him. It was quite unusual. It was a peach. I can see it in my mind's eye right now. It was a peach shirt with wooden buttons and pearl earrings. And my husband is a lovely man and extremely supportive of me in every way. And he was also skeptical that that I was inventing it. So he, which is total, I certainly encourage healthy skepticism, because it's important that we are able to perceive for ourselves what the truth is. And this is really important and part of my teaching. Eve, my mother-in-law, became more and more visible to my mind's eye. And we ended up having a conversation that flew by. In retrospect, it was about 2 hours, in which I described a variety of things. My husband, being skeptical, had said a silent prayer, he admitted later, in which he wanted his mother to communicate information that was so detailed that there was no way that I could know. And so I sketched the exact outfit that she was buried in.
Wow.
Down to the buttons, yeah. And so, interestingly enough, when we were done with the conversation and she faded, the communication, the last communication that I received to her at this and in this interaction, was one of the most touching communications on the other side I've ever received. Sort of makes me weepy to tell you, but it was. And mind you, communication is multidimensional. It is not just hearing something or seeing something. So this communication was a wave of feeling that contained information. And it was a deep gratitude and powerful love. But it was from the perspective of a mother-in-law. And she was thanking me. It was gratitude for being a wife to her son and a mother to her grandchildren. It touches me to tell you the story again.
That's so sweet.
It is. I can imagine that your husband was no longer skeptical after you.
He wasn't, and I do as a post note. I will tell you that I had never met her in body. She had died in 1976, and this was three decades before our first encounter.
I love that it being a wave of feeling. That's great.
Yeah, and I love.
Go ahead.
I wanted you to share your feelings. What was it that you said?
I was just saying, Jane, that I love that you called it a wave of feeling. It's not just hearing and seeing, but it's a wave of feeling that comes to you in this communication. Yeah.
Thank you. And that's something that I teach when I teach people to communicate with their loved ones on the other side, is to open up our perception or our thought boxes, if you will. Each of us has our perception of reality in a box, is how I like to imagine it, because frankly, that's how I see it. And if our box is at least permeable at the top or open-ended, then we have more of an open mind, as you can imagine a closed box, the closed mind. And one of the primary things that I like to teach and instill in people is that communication with the afterlife and also communication with animals in this dimension requires an open mind and accepting that being able to interact includes feeling, includes sensation, includes tangible, physical things that we might see in this world, like pennies. People in the afterlife often send pennies or messages through animals. Physical sensations like tingles up the spine, waves of electricity on the palms, this kind of thing.
Oh, that's so interesting.
I think it's compelling.
Very much, yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting about what you said earlier was the discussing the afterlife is taboo in many circles, and I think that that's one of the reasons why I think what you're doing with this afterlife symposium is so important is that once we begin to understand that it's okay to consider it and talk about it and interact, our entire view of our existence changes, and we don't have to live in that. It's interesting to me that we go to a person's funeral, and the minister or priest will say, you know, they're in this beautiful place, life everlasting, amen, right? That it's all life ever. They confirm this beautiful afterlife. But once you start talking about it in real 3D terms, people tend to really demonize it. And so I love that you guys are doing this and are able to share with folks that it's a loving energy.
Yes, and it's a really good point that in our culture we think there hopefully in a happy place, and they're continuing in some aspect, although in many belief structures, the dead lay in their caskets until judgment day when they raise up.
Right.
So even just having them in heaven is better, in my opinion, than at least, you know, laying in the grave. But yes, absolutely. One of the most important things that I discovered from interaction with my clients and their relatives on the afterlife, and mind you, as an aside, I am always learning. And please don't confuse me with someone who knows everything about this subject. I'm a student also. one of my clients is in my book, Love Never Dies, a psychic artist illustrates true stories of the afterlife. A little plug for my book there. But in chapter seven,
awesome.
By the way, I'm a trained artist, and I was a professional artist for years, which is how I cultivated and practiced this natural ability that I have and that all of us have. There's nothing really special about me except that I've developed it. And I also have a great disability, which is severe dyslexia, which required that I get information through osmosis and absorb it in different ways than a linear
reading. Oh, interesting. Isn't that interesting,
so
how our gifts can be transmuted and transformed with our brain chemistry like that? But talk to it. You combine your artistic background and create drawings in this unique way with your readings. Tell our audience about how that works, because I think that's just fascinating.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to me too. I was a mural artist for years and painted whole environments like as if they were ancient ruins or jungles or windows to a different reality. And I became relatively successful. People thought I was brilliant because I would submit renderings. They would tell me of exactly what they wanted in their imagination to be projected onto their walls or painted onto their walls. But in fact, I was not a genius. I was just reading their minds, basically, and I did a very good job executing the work, but that's how I cultivated my skill in a professional way and then studied with two well-known psychics for cultivating it in a practical way. But there's two aspects to the artistic work, and this is what I teach, and I'll be teaching in the workshop on Sunday. It is being able to access information from this dream world, which is where dreams happen. It's where our imagination is. It's where our intuition resides. It is where we meet those on the other side, and you might call it a place, if you want to call a place like a meadow. Indigenous cultures have a word for it. We don't have a word for it in our culture, but the Aborigines call it a dream time, so we can stick with that. But accessing information from this place is most easily done through drawing, and anybody can do it. Drawing is a pre-verbal, and it is often the words that get in the way. So by drawing this information that I perceive and that I can teach others to do, I can get a high accuracy. And when I meet a client and I'm drawing information, I require that I meet a 80% accuracy rate or I won't proceed with the reading. So that's very high, by the way, for a psychic. So what I'm able to draw and what I'm able to teach people to do is access this information by circumventing language. Language reduces things, and it's frankly, it's primitive.
Yeah, I appreciate
you're
talking about how drawing is pre-verbal. It's peeling off that layer of labels that and getting right to the source. I love that.
Yes, and by labeling something, we limit it. You know, by the as a child, we look at a tree, and we see a dimensional organism that's got life. It's got intelligence. It's a mystery, but our parents tell us that's a tree. So, by labeling and reducing it to an object, we reduce our perception of the mystery of it and therefore the information we can get from it.
Oh, that's amazing, reducing our perception. Could you talk a little bit about the intuitive ability? I assume that you probably agree that everyone can develop it. Do you feel that some people are just born with more of it? Or is it something that people can learn so that they're not being limited by just intellectual knowledge of a tree or whatever? Could you just speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that absolutely every single one of us is born with the capacity to access our intuition. It's our birthright. Every animal has instinct, if you want to call it that, to feel the lion might be around the corner, or intuition that someone's going to call and they do. We've all had that feeling that someone's looking at us and we turn around and they are. So this is just a natural ability that we all have. Unfortunately, it's been educated out of us. I absolutely think, I would say probably 80% of the people can cultivate it and learn it. The first step is believing that it's possible. If people are determined that it doesn't exist or that it's there's something negative about it, then they've shut the box. Remember I talked about reality boxes?
Right.
Then their reality box is closed, and by golly, they won't be able to access it. Although that doesn't mean they don't have things happen to them that make them question it, because serendipities are ubiquitous. But absolutely everyone has this ability, and there's nothing special about me. Or you might say, there's something special about all of us.
Well, what techniques do you use in your practice? Are there some very specific techniques that you use?
Yes.
Can other people learn how to use those same techniques?
Yes, there are specific techniques that I teach, and I've reduced them to a very simple process with just a few steps for general learning. And then I do take personal students where we go a little more in-depth than I teach. It's pretty complicated when it gets in-depth. You know, what are the symbols? Symbols are very important to research because, interestingly enough, archetypes, which are symbols on a collective consciousness level, are something that are imbued in all of our DNA. So, but simple things that people can do is for 30 days, and I say 30 days because it takes that long for the brain synapses, which actually have physical connections. They're called dendrites. They grow. They look like plants that create troughs for our thinking. So if you can do it for 30 days, it's a help, because it's telling your conscious mind that you mean business, or your subconscious mind rather. So for 30 days, if you can take just 10 minutes, 30 minutes is better, but we're all busy. And the same time of day is particularly helpful. You're acquainted with the great mythologist Joseph Campbell, it was his suggestion that you spend an hour every day at the same time, because that is letting the muse know, and the muse is the personification of creativity, that you would like to meet her, and eventually she will show up. So, for those 10 minutes or half an hour or an hour, if you're committed, sit there and just draw. with the intention that you would like to communicate with your higher self or somebody in particular. By drawing in this way, you'll start to build your muscle to access your intuition. After some time, I do teach people to use objects, hidden objects or picture cards. Say if you have a deck of tarot cards or some oracle cards, take the oracle card and pick randomly, turning it upside down in front of you, and then draw what you think is on that card. If you get any of it correct, circle it with a red crayon or pencil. That tells your subconscious that you had a hit. The more hits you get, the more accurate you become. And by the way, there is beginner's luck on this. For the first few, you will get expect to get absolute miraculous documentation of the unknown image upside down in front of you. You will feel very proud. You will feel like putting your name as a psychic on the list of international psychics. and then will come the next, where you absolutely miss and don't get anything right for some time. Expect that too. It seems to be, and I don't have any explanation as to why that's right, but it does seem to be a constant. But within 30 days, you'll be surprised at your accuracy, and that would be the first step. That's what
perhaps,
we'll be teaching a little bit about.
Perhaps it's source encouraging us to carry on by giving us some positive feedback for our effort.
I think that beginner's luck might be that.
That's just fascinating. Jane, you know, I don't want your section to end without you talking about animals and your communication with animals and whether they survive death and whether they can return to visit or how we even communicate with animals on this plane. Can you sort of cover those things and let us know what your thoughts are?
Sure. Well, animals are sentient beings. Most of us know that on some level. They are intelligent beings, and they do understand much more than we think they do. My primary communication has been with dogs and cats, but and horses. Horses are really compelling. I have communicated with a bunny, and my most profound interspecies communication was with a beehive. But it taught me a lot, and actually it was, I could get all into that, but I'll give you a brief overview. Communications with those animals that I do are pets, or if you can call a horse a pet, but and they are for very specific reasons, particularly health reasons. So, and one of them, my conversation with Ishtar the horse is a chapter in the book, my book, Love Never Dies. And it was a horse who was refusing to jump. And so the owner of the horse, and by the way, horses do not understand ownership. Humans think they own the horse or the animal, but the horse didn't understand the concept of ownership at all. But anyway, I worked with this horse who didn't jump, who told me that its leg hurt and it wanted some kind of tight contraption on its leg. I don't know a lot about horses, so I told this to the owner who knew exactly what it was. I think it's called a sock, a compression sock. But we had to first set up the understanding that I was at 80% with the horse, because I didn't want to do the reading if I was just, you know, if it wasn't a miss, and sometimes it's a miss. But anyway, the horse gave me an image, and this is how animals communicate with images. Of course, they wouldn't use language, but that's not necessarily, it's funny how humans project that other species, how they might communicate. By the way, that's also the technique of communicating with animals is by pictures, by imagining things and then projecting them. But this horse projected an image of a tall, elegant woman with big jewelry who was very kind and had a broken heart and something to do with the mail. So I told the owner of the horse this, and she was shocked because the previous owner of the horse was a tall, elegant woman who wore big jewelry, was very wealthy, and had her husband had left her after 20 or 30 years of marriage, and so she had to sell the horse.
Aww.
This horse, the owner told whomever the stable fellow was to put the sock, compression sock, on the horse. And I guess he didn't get around to it. And somebody jumped the horse and blew the horse's leg out. So the horse can never jump again. So it turned out to be quite accurate. But yes, animals do, and I know I'm running out of time, so I won't be able to tell you the next story, but animals do survive death, and I talk about it in another chapter of my book, The Mysterious Death of Max the Dog. A client came to me with a sick feeling that her dog had been murdered. And in fact, it turned out to be true. I was able to describe the man who did kill the dog, wounded the dog severely.
Horrible.
Yeah, horrible.
Oh my goodness.
But the dog did say that I'm getting chills as I tell you this story. The dog was very, very healthy and happy on the afterlife, and was a guide for her in this life. Told her that he did not feel the pain and left his body in time.
Oh, that's
and
so important
that
to understand, isn't it?
Yes, and most importantly, this is what was dumbfounding to me, frankly. And as I said again, I'm a student, as much a student as anyone. And what I hadn't anticipated is that the dog was so intelligent that it was now giving advising its previous owner to stay away from the neighbor who had killed the dog because he was a meth addict and would bring harm to her.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Such communication.
Wow.
Isn't
that
compelling?
That is really amazing.
That's awesome.
I mean, you never
that's
look
really
at a dog or a horse again in the same way.
No, that's really true. You know, Doggy and I both have our dogs with us when we're riding and having our meetings, and we both communicate with pictures to them. It's quite an amazing relationship that you can communicate that way, and it's very affirming to hear you talk about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much
mm-hmm.
for that.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate
it. Just to remind everybody, we have been speaking with Jane DeForest, the author of Love Never Dies, intuitive coach, animal communicator, and medium. We're talking about the Afterlife Symposium. You can learn more about the Afterlife Symposium at www.afterlifesymposium.net. There'll be a link for that right on the screen where you're listening into this show. And we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk with Petra Nicole, who is the author of Petra's Ashes and other works, and is also an emotional coach. And we will be right back.
We understand how you're feeling. Maybe you've made resolutions repeatedly to change something in your life, and they never seem to work out. Perhaps the process was just too challenging. What if you tried something completely different this time? If you have 15 minutes a day to invest in yourself, then we'd like to welcome you to your new epic life. You deserve it. It's about being uncomplicated. Gift yourself with just 15 minutes. Every day for 30 days. Your life will transform in magical ways. To learn more, go to matrixproductions.co/epic.
Are you looking for a book to boost your child's self-esteem and image? Listen to what six-time Emmy Award winner and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Shawn Duperin has to say about the Journey of Joy children's book series. She says, quote, "It's inspiring to find a children's book series that gets to the heart of why we're here and to enjoy life's journey. It is truly compelling. It reinforces your child's strong sense of self, the essence of what every parent wants for their precious child. I highly recommend," end quote. The four inspiring and beautifully illustrated books in the Journey of Joy children's book series, authored by Beth Donnelly and Dagny Grant, can be found on Amazon.com. Sharing the wisdom of positive I Am statements, these books are titled I Am Enough, I Am Unique and Awesome, I Am Great, and I Am Brave. Pick up a set for the children in your life today. Just go to Amazon.com and enter Journey of Joy series. That's Journey of Joy series.
All right, welcome back, and we are really having a great conversation today with both Jane DeForest and Petra Nicole. We're about to speak with Petra about her work. She has had a fascinating, she's going to be one of the speakers at the Afterlife Symposium, and has had a really fascinating near-death experience that she speaks to at great length in her the book that she authored titled Petra's Ashes. And so welcome, Petra. Tell our audience what happened during your NDE. It's such an amazing story, and we appreciate you being here to share this with us. And we know the audience at the Afterlife Symposium is going to find this really amazing as well.
Thanks for having me again, Dagny and Bess. It's good to be here. Hi, it's so nice to be back. Well, it's been quite a long time, really, since my near-death experience, but I think that we go through little near-death experiences every night when we go to sleep without breaking the sofa cord. It feels like last night I had a dream about David Bowie, and he gave me his songbook of his last album and all the poetry in it, and I thought, wow, this is really interesting. What is the message here? So I immediately had to download all the songs and find the message. So,
wow.
But my own near-death experience changed my life profoundly. So many people that have had near-death experiences come back, questioning, first of all, why are they here, and what is all this fuss about when there is so much bliss and so much harmony on the other side, and why are humans so shielded from this bliss and love, this incredibly ecstatic love that we feel when we cross over. And so for me, it was shooting through a tunnel. I was very, very ill as a little child, and I collapsed and was home alone. And my mother and my brother found me under the coffee table in the living room and pulled me out. And I was driven to a hospital nearby, a children's hospital. And by the time we went to the hospital, we arrived at the hospital, I was already on the ceiling. And what was so extraordinary, and what I remember the most, was the sound. There was a humming sound, like an om sound that reverberated throughout the hospital. And it was so soothing. And I felt like I could glide on that sound into the space that kept me safe. And I felt so enveloped by this love and this all-knowingness. And what was so extraordinary is that, you're suddenly in this being, you know your personality is still there, but your body is laying on the hospital bed, and you see yourself from the ceiling down to to why am I up here and I'm feeling great and everybody's crying down below. What is all that? And so I was able to jump
into the bodies of everyone. Especially when you're so young when it happened. Yeah.
Absolutely. I was feeling my father's grief. I mean, he was absolutely, it wasn't even just grief, it was absolute terror. Like the second I was able to absorb his energy of what he was emotionally feeling, it was terror. Terror for me not to survive. And then my mother was sitting outside. I saw through the walls, so I was able to see her outside, and she was just completely numb. She had completely shut down. And she had to sign a contract. And then I saw the doctors. They were all very, very worried and also in a panic mode to save my life. And so that was extraordinary, to be able to feel everything and literally jump into people's bodies and know what they're, you know, going through in this moment. And then trying to get their attention, saying, but I'm here, I'm fine. That was quite bizarre. And then suddenly I was shot through a tunnel of fluffy clouds, like with the speed of light. And it was sort of like, you know, some of the movies we see that depict people, you know, going through space really fast. It was quite quite picturesque and beautiful. And I came out in a gigantic library space, which now I understand, you know, later in my life I learned that was the Akashic Records. And I had at that moment the encounter with the masters that were waiting for me there. And particularly recognized one as the pictures. I grew up in Munich, Germany, so I grew up in with Catholic parents, and I saw Yeshua, or Jesus, as some people refer to him, and he was just so full of light and full of love, and literally was shooting these laser beams of love into my body, where I thought I was going to implode into pure light, into just millions of particles of light. So that was quite beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And
that sounds like a beautiful experience, Petra. I'm sure that experience affected your life in so many ways. Is there one instance you'd like to maybe recount on the effect of that as you moved forward?
Well, you know, first of all, I didn't want to come back. I asked, it was telepathic communication. So when you cross over, you're not speaking with your voice, you know, you're not really human. You're suddenly timeless, ageless. You're not a child. You just are one with everything. And I didn't want to come back. And then, of course, the next day I woke up. So that what I remember is the difficulty of being suddenly in a human form again and people not understanding where I had been and that I was not able to speak about it. Because in those days, 1969 or 1970, you know, little girls don't talk to Jesus. They don't have that kind of knowledge that was reserved for the priests, you know. So I had to keep it very quiet and suppress that information. And what I noticed was that I couldn't sweat the small stuff. I was always reaching for my masters. I mean, where are my teachers? Where is the teacher that I need? You know, why am I even here? Like, what is this all about? This is such an illusion, and there's nothing real about this earth plane. It didn't feel to me, I think the other side felt more real than being actually on earth felt sort of out of whack for me. So... And I'm sure we've all felt that before. I think everyone listening would say, yeah, I felt like this once. You know, I felt like I'm not fitting in. Or who am I really? And why are we here? What is this entire journey all about, right?
Right. Wow. You know, I know a good part of your story, and it's just amazing, Petra. And it's like your life could have been a movie or a novel, only, you know, it wasn't. You studied with so many people. I'm thinking of with Madre Sarita, the grandmother of Miquel Ruiz, who wrote the Four Agreements, and you were introduced to shamanism. Can you just give us a little indication of what that meant to you and how these experiences affected your writing and the processes that you used in your coaching services even today?
Well, I was looking for ways to help people. That was always in the forefront of my mission. My spiritual teacher from India, I studied for 11 years with an Indian teacher in the Surat Jap Yoga system, light and sound meditation, and he clearly told me what my life was all about and why I come. And so for me, I felt very blessed and felt like life was a miracle. After figuring out a few things, I realized that every day was a miracle, and I wanted to find a way to relate that to other humans, to other people, and because what we're seeing is so much depression. I mean, we've got so many people on drugs. You know, we have it's really become an epidemic. And so this afterlife symposium is such an honor to be part of, and what Jane has put together is just extraordinary, and her mission. That hopefully we can relate to people that, no, it's not hopeless. Life is truly a miracle. Being in a human body is a miracle. It is the temple, and we are on a free will planet. We are in a free will, place where we can create our own reality. And I think sometimes humans have forgotten how to do that. We feel so enslaved and so beaten down, and that's the part that makes me sad. That there are so many people still feeling so hopeless, and luckily the teachers I met have taught me so many systems. And I always ask, why am I given so many systems? I've given so many, and it's because there are so many people that I have yet to meet, and not everyone relates to one system. So I have to have hundreds of them.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. It's something that Beth and I've talked about in our work, is that not everybody learns. You know, we can have 15 teachers, and one of them says the same thing in just a slightly different way that we actually resonate with. And so I love that. In your work, Petra, you refer to receiving invitations. Can you tell us a little bit about what that actually means and why it's important to receive invitations?
Receiving invitations, meaning if we stay open-minded, if we're not getting, it's like Jane mentioned, you know, about words, about language, how if someone says to a little child, this is a tree, it's suddenly limited to this word. And so the invitations are always there for us to expand into a bigger universe, because we're in a multi-layer universe. I mean, there's really so much to absorb. And if we're able to tune into other people, then we know the layers in which they operate so that we can tune in an effective way. And that is how what I meant by invitation, and inviting people into the space to be healed and to be, to have hope for living effectively and creatively, because I think creativity is the most important part, and I feel very lucky that I get to write books and produce that kind of thing and do intuitive coaching with my clients. And, you know, I see this with my clients is when they expand, or I do a sacred contract reading, and people suddenly realize what their archetypes are. I mean, it's very powerful when that recognition comes in. So...
Well, yeah, tell us a little bit about intuitive coaching. What exactly is intuitive coaching, and how does that, is that different than other forms of coaching? How does that work?
Well, I call it intuitive coaching because what I found is I went through, of course, the coaching school and getting certified and all of that. And so they give you a system, right? But really, the system is very limited. The system's limited because it has the borders. And so intuitive coaching is really, I didn't really want to call it psychic coaching because that rules out, a whole bunch of arenas of people. So intuitive coaching, meaning being able to tune in to what that person needs in that moment and being able to really read is very similar to what Jane does with her work with being a medium and drawing. I do it through different avenues. I just can look at a person and see what it is they need, and I ask the universe to give me the message. And so the message is there of what it is they really need to work on. They may come to me for one reason, but then they realize they really came for a totally different reason.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. We've had that before, well, right? All of us.
Before we get into a little bit of comments from both of you about the Afterlife Symposium, I don't want to leave Petra until she talks a little bit about The Billionaire, which I read and enjoyed so much. It was really a page-turner. And I've heard that you're working on a sequel. Soulmate?
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for reading the book. I am so happy you did, and I bet you liked it, because I was on needles and pins trying to find out what you thought of it, because your opinion really, really is important to me, Beth, and so thank you for that. It is now out on Audible, so if anybody wants to read it on Audible, I can send the link. You know, you can download it for free. If you're a first-time visitor of Audible, it's a free, Audible book. But the second book, basically, What the Billionaire is a story about the afterlife and about being reborn. It's about reincarnation. And it's about someone who is given a second chance to fix a few things from his previous life and happens to be a billionaire. And he has to come back as a billionaire. But this time, he's also assigned a teacher. And the teacher comes in, and no one ever really knows who the teacher really is until way later in the sequel. And it is becoming a sequel. It's like a narrative, like Celestine Prophecy, you know, where it's a novel, or it could be a movie or a Netflix series of someone who has now, who recognizes that he has a mission on Earth. And in this case, it's a rock star. His name's Eli. And his mission is to change the radio frequency back to where it used to be, from 440 to 432, so that it can ignite the hearts of the human race. And so in it, he goes through depression. He goes through all the trials and tribulations of humanity, and then comes through and meets and his guides and teachers and becomes a real mensch. Yeah, it's really fun to write, you guys. The next one is sort of more sci-fi. There's a lot of information about iboga and ayahuasca, and there is information about cryptocurrency and all kinds of things. So,
my goodness, well.
Yeah, I've been doing some research on ayahuasca as well. That is fascinating stuff. That sounds really fun. It's wild how fast time is flying. I wanted to just remind everybody that on the screen that you're listening to this, go ahead and click on. We've got three links there: one to janesinspiration.com, petranicole.com, and then to pick up tickets to this Afterlife Symposium, go to www.afterlifesymposium.net. The link is going to be right there, and. Gosh, you know, if we were to, Pedro, let's start with you. If you had any final messages that you wanted to share with people before we sign off today, what would you like to leave everybody with?
I would just encourage people to come to the symposium. It's going to be extraordinary and hear from these incredible women that Jane and Georgina, Ruth, and myself. We're going to have so much fun speaking with you and doing questions and answers, etc. So I hope, you know, people take advantage of it and check us out at New Renaissance Books in Portland this next week, week after next, I guess it is. So thank you.
Yeah, and all the information about that, again, is going to be at that www.afterlifesymposium.net link. It's a beautiful page with all of the information you need to be able to pick up tickets for that or share that with your friends who may also be interested. Jane, it's been lovely to speak with you as well today. And, again, everybody, this is we've been speaking with Jane DeForest. She is putting this Afterlife Symposium together for everybody. And what final thoughts would you like to share with everybody today?
Well, thank you so much for having us all on. I did want to give you the phone number. New Renaissance is the place to get the tickets at 503-224-4929. And I am so thrilled to be able to communicate with other humans about communicating with humans on the other side. And I think the more that we can embrace life as a whole journey, especially at this wonderful and important time of spring equinox / Easter, that that rebirth, resurrection, and that we don't die is something that we can hold dear to our hearts and live a fuller life. So thank you for having me.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Jane and Petra. You guys are awesome, and this symposium is going to be awesome, I am sure. So I just a message out to our audience to please take a look at the links that are on the radio site, and we hope to see you there. I know I'm in the area, so maybe I will.
Yeah,
and one day
and again,
exactly,
we have the
yeah.
links to come visit. Right? That would be so much fun. And again, we have Jane and Petra's independent links on the site here as well. Check out their work. Check out their books. Check out what's going on with other events that they're having. And to our audience, as always, we are so grateful for you. And until next time, everybody, peace.
Peace out. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Echoes of the Universe. Join us again for conversations that inspire you to realize your endless possibilities. Same time, same station, same universe.